Chapter 12. Yeah, this was not what I had in mind when I first got out of bed that morning. The damn thing should have been slow. By every law of physics, by every right, a centipede that big should have been slow. Dinosauric. Elephantine. But this was the never-never. You didn't play by the same rules here. Physics were sort of a guideline, and a very loose and elastic guideline at that. Here, the mind and heart had more sway than the material, and the big guy was fast. That enormous predatory head shot at me like the engine of some psychotic locomotive, its killer jaws spreading wide. Fortunately for me, I was, just barely, faster. I brought forth my left hand, holding it out in a palm-forth gesture of command and denial, a universal pose meaning one thing: stop. Intent was important in this place. As the jaws closed, I brought up my spherical shield to meet it, the energy humming through my bracelet's charms, which burst into shining light as the magic coursing through them shone through the ephemeral substance of mere material metals. The jaws closed with a crunch and a crash, and my bracelet flared even brighter. The shield exploded in more colors and shapes than a company of kaleidoscopes and turned aside the beast's jaws. Its strength, after all, was just one more bit of materially oriented power in an immaterial realm. I brought my right hand out of my coat, holding my blasting rod, and with a shouted word, loosed a sledgehammer of searing power. It dipped down and then curled up an instant before it hit, landing a sorcerous uppercut on what passed for the centipede's chin. It flung the creature's head several yards up, and its entire body rippled in agony. Which, in retrospect, probably shouldn't have caught me quite as off guard as it did. The ground beneath my feet heaved and bucked, and I went flying, my arms whirling in a useless windmill. I landed in a sprawl amid ranks of primroses, which immediately began to move, lashing out with tiny stem tendrils lined with wickedly sharp little thorns. Even as I struggled back to my feet, tearing them away from my wrists and ankles, I noticed that the flowers around me had begun to blush a deep blood red.
"You know what, Harry?" Bob called. "I don't think this is a garden at all."
"Genius," I muttered, as the centipede recovered its balance and began reorienting itself to attack. Its body flowed forward, following the motion of its head. I decided that all those legs hitting the earth like post-hole diggers in steady sequence made the giant bug sound less like a locomotive than a big piece of farm equipment churning by. I ran at it, focusing my will beneath me, planted my staff on the earth, and swung my legs up in a pole vaulter's leap. I unleashed my will beneath and behind me as I did, and flew over the thing's back as it continued surging forward. It let out a rumbling sound of displeasure as I went, the head twisting to follow me, forced to slow down enough to allow its own rearmost legs to get out of its way. It bought me only a few seconds. Bigger doesn't mean better, especially in the never-never. 1 second was time enough to turn, focus another beam of fire into a far smaller area, and bring it down like an enormous cutting torch, almost precisely across the middle of the big bug's body. An act of precision magic that I'd learned from Lucio, and which I was not at all confident I could have duplicated in the real world. The beam, no bigger around than a couple of my fingers, sliced the creature in half as neatly and simply as if I'd used a paper cutter the size of a semi-trailer. It shrieked in pain, a brazen, bellowing sound that conveyed, even from such an alien thing, the depth of its physical agony. Its hindquarters just kept right on rolling forward, as if they hadn't noticed that the head was gone. The front half of the thing began to veer and waver wildly, its limited brain perhaps overloaded by the effort of sending nerve impulses to bits of its anatomy that no longer existed. It settled into a pattern of chasing its own retreating midsection, rolling in a great circle that crushed the ranks of primroses on either side of the trail.
"Booyah!"
I shouted in pure triumph, the adrenaline turning my manly baritone into a rather terrified-sounding shriek.
"What have you got for a fiery beam of death, huh? You got nothing for a fiery beam of death. Might as well go back to Atari, bug boy, 'cause you don't got game enough for me."
It took me 5 or 6 seconds to realize what was happening. The wound I'd inflicted hadn't allowed for much bleeding, cauterizing even as it sliced, but even that little bit of bleeding stopped on both severed halves of the monster. The front half's wounded rear end suddenly rounded out. The second half's wounded front end shuddered and suddenly warped in place. And then, with a wriggling motion, a new freaking head began to writhe free of the severed stump. Within seconds, both halves had focused on me, and then two of the freaking things rolled at me, jaws clashing and snapping, equally strong, equally as deadly as before. Only they were going to come rushing at me from multiple directions now. "Wow," Bob said in a perfectly calm, matter-of-fact, conversational tone. "That is incredibly unfair." "Been that kind of day," I said. I swapped my blasting rod for my staff. The rod was great for pitching fire around, but I needed to pull off something more complicated than it was really meant to handle, and my wizard's staff was a great deal more versatile, meant for handling a broad range of possibilities. I called forth my will and laced it with a soul fire within me, then thrust the staff ahead and called,
"Fuego Murus! Fuego Velum!"
Energy rushed out of me, and silver-white fire rose up in a ring nearly 60 feet across, 3 feet thick, and 3 or 4 yards high. The roar of the flames seemed to be somehow intertwined with an odd tone that sounded like nothing so much as the voice of a great bell.